Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. With me today is Maxwell Ivey, Mr. What's Your Excuse? Welcome to the podcast, Max.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here, and it's really good to get to speak to you this morning.
Thanks. So we're going to be discussing today how to use podcasting to build your brand. But before we go into the details of the episode, I'm going to set it up and introduce Max. So I actually spoke to Max maybe 18 months ago for my personal podcast, The Advertising Hour, and we were speaking about Max's journey as an author, as a blogger. Max is, I would say, maybe formerly known as now the blind blogger Maxwell Ivey, or maybe also known as the blind blogger Maxwell Ivey. And I follow Max's career from a little bit of a distance, and I've been watching Max's career develop over this last couple of years and maybe transition or add this podcasting skill set to his repertoire as a publicist, as a host, as a guest. And I was fascinated to learn more about Max's journey over the last couple of years, and also, Max, your experience in building your brand via podcasting. So I'd like to jump into all of those topics today, if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me. As you know, I'm a veteran of dozens of podcasts, and I'm more than happy to speak on whatever the podcast host thinks will most interest or best benefit their audience. So
I'd love to start off with your, as I described it, your maybe your journey or transition from the blind blogger to Mr. What's Your Excuse. That's something that's been noticeable for me from the outside looking in over this last couple of years. So was that intentional, that kind of changed your personal branding?
I wish I could say it was intentional, just like I wish I could say anything else I've done in the last 14 years was intentional. I was doing a podcast earlier this week when a woman who does a show about authors asked me if I worked with an outline. And I said something like, you've been talking to me for a half hour. Do you think I ever have a plan? You know, that's just the way I do things. What generally happens is somebody will say, you know, Max, I think you would be really good at doing that. Or Max, you've been doing this really, really well. Have you thought about expanding into that? Or, you know, my favorite is, Max, I dare you. And, you know, basically, if you don't do it, then you're a chicken. I started my first website, the Midway Marketplace, in 2007 because my family's carnival business had gone out of business. And I needed something to do and hopefully something to make a living from. So I started selling used carnival rides on the internet and had to learn so many things, including hand coding HTML to get started. And then, you know, people said, you know, Max, we really appreciate how you take on these challenges. We want to hear more. We think you're very inspirational. So that led to the blind blogger. I'm doing the work promoting the Midway Marketplace and the blind blogger in my writing. And people start saying something to the effect of, if Max can do it, then what's my excuse? Mm-hmm. And so that has gradually seeped into who I am. And, you know, if you get a chance to check out my logo, y'all, you'll see it's kind of a combination. It has a silhouette of me in a cape, like I'm a superhero in front of a globe and I'm about to come and save the world. But it also has the blind blogger across the chest, and it has the "what's your excuse" down below as my catchphrase. So, you know, speaking to what you said earlier, I have multiple as known as. So, and, you know, I was doing a lot of podcast interviews, so people suggested I start a podcast. I've had a podcast for 6 years now. And people said, you know, Max, there are a lot of other people with disabilities who might want to start a podcast. You could help them. So now I have a podcast network. you know, I did so many podcast interviews, people started asking me, Max, can you get me on shows? And so that led to me being a publicist where, you know, I make introductions. I tell people's stories to hosts and make them just want to have my friends and clients on their podcast. So a lot of this is interconnected. A lot of it has happened because I did one thing and the next thing and then the next thing. I like to say this is a continuing journey that started in September of 2007 when I filed for my first domain name, not knowing how I was even going to create the website to go with it.
What I'm interested in, Max, is that in theory, so you mentioned you've been podcasting, you've had your podcast for 6 years, but more recently over these last couple of years, I know that you've developed into a publicist and you've created your own network. Is podcasting now making up the majority of your time, or do you still invest the same amount of time into blogging, writing, that kind of thing?
No, I like to tell people I may do a lot of things, but I don't do them all at the same time. So yeah, I spend more time podcasting. And in fact, when I first started the network back in January of last year, I was really, you know, involved in the whole process of, you know, starting with somebody who wanted to have a show and, you know, helping them record their intro and submitting and doing those things. And I'm finding now, even just a year later, which is a surprise to me, I didn't think it would happen this quickly. A year later, I'm finding that I'm having to look at getting people to do more of that sort of stuff so I can spend my time, you know, bringing in the new hosts, explaining the value, making connections to potential sponsors or donors or investors. So it's just been crazy how quickly it's happened and how many people with disabilities or people who support friends and family members who have a disability who have really just commented on how what I'm doing is a resource that was missing and that one of the things the disability community doesn't do well is collaboration between people with different types of disabilities. So it could be that I thought I was starting a podcast network. It could be that I'm creating the type of community that really needs to be out there for the millions of people that have a disability to finally, you know, work together and get things to change for them for the better. So we'll see what the result is. But yeah, I spend more time podcasting. I haven't written a new book in a year and a half, and it's currently writing for publication is at the bottom of my list. Blogging is generally blogging to promote a podcast episode. I haven't created any new merchandise in a while because I feel like since I can't visually see it and create it myself, that's time I can spend doing things that I am more capable of. So yeah, it's interesting. I think that, you know, this is kind of where I've been headed to for 14 years and thinking of it that way is encouraging because then it keeps me from thinking, man, Max, it's been 14 years. When are you going to make it? You know, when are you going to be rich and famous and, you know, more people than the people who've gotten to know you personally, like you have. Know who the heck you are. So it's great to see it all coming together as possibly a business model and also to help so many more people. And it's really, you know, it started with creating a website, then blogging, then podcasting, then publicity, then being a host. And, you know, here I am now. I haven't done all of it right. I probably haven't done 35% of it right, at least not the first time. I'm still making mistakes. I'm still falling on my ass. I'm still looking up at the sky some days and going, what the heck were you thinking, Max? But, you know, I continue to do it. And I think one of the biggest things I've learned about any type of creative process is you have to continue to see it as fun. You have to do whatever you can to find the adventure in what you're doing, or it becomes simply a job. And then it becomes easy to quit, which is probably why, you know, there are so many podcasters who quit about episode 7, 8, or 9. And a lot of people drop off after that, you know, month and a half, 2 month period because they've lost that sense of wonder and adventure. And I bring that up because for years, I would go to conferences or travel for my personal benefit 3 or 4 times a year. And during COVID, I've missed it. But what I've come to understand is that the podcast network is a whole different kind of adventure that's a whole lot more challenging than figuring out how to get myself from here to Orlando so I can speak an event. You know, it's it's indoor adventuring, which as opposed to a couple of my podcast hosts are outdoor adventurers.
So that's interesting because that's something I wanted to come on to. So we spoke when we spoke 18 months or so ago. Well, we talked about a lot, but we talked about accessibility issues with respect to visual impairments. And it's funny, that's something that's come up in the lead up to this podcast as well. We had some technical issues over the last couple of months, just trying to get this podcast arranged. And I'm interested to know, you've put in the hard work over, as you've said, the 14 years in learning how to build websites, blogging, all of those things that you would assume are more difficult for the visually impaired and are more difficult for the visually impaired. And now there's the resurgence of podcasting, which is arguably going through its third or fourth boom. And I'm hearing this kind of almost feeling of liberation in your voice because you're a natural in front of the microphone and you've put in all that hard work and got through all of those obstacles. And now all of a sudden there's this medium which is booming and you're perfect at it. You're great at it. So is that a liberating time for you at the moment?
You know, I was getting those tingly feelings you get up and down your back when you hear really good music or somebody says something that, you know, they're like, well, I thought about that a year ago or 2 years ago, and here it is. So it is really rewarding to have become one of the cool kids, you know, to go from people not knowing what the heck a podcast is to listening to them, but not knowing who you are and not wanting to invest 30 minutes or so to find out who you are to like, wait a minute, you're one of the experts. I want to start a podcast, or could you explain to me why my podcast isn't working, or, you know, my business, should my business, you know, people ask me, should my business have a podcast? Should my organization have one? If so, how do we do it? It's just last month, I submitted an article for the American Printing House for the Blind's website on starting a podcast from the point of view of somebody with a disability, focusing on making it as simple as possible. Because as you know, as humans, we can overcomplicate anything. You know, we can decide in our minds that we need to have stuff that we don't absolutely have to have, at least not in the beginning. So I, you know, being asked to write an article for a national online magazine on the subject of podcasting, you know, being invited to speak at conferences, it's like, yeah, Max, you've done the work. People recognize it. And that's a really hard thing with podcasting, because as you know, we can do a lot of great work, and 95% of the people who listen will never contact us. They will never leave a rating or a review. They will never send an email. They will never buy a piece of merch. But because we were there, their life could have been uplifted. It could have been improved. It could have even been changed, you know, depending on the person and the point they were at in their lives when they heard your content. Mm-hmm. Also, what we do, we're kind of a little bit of a historian in addition to entertainment. Just think about the people who got to interview Betty White over the last year. You know, just think about somebody who gets an opportunity to say to interview Dolly Parton this year because she's getting a little old. You know, people who got to speak to Stan Lee a few years ago. So in addition to, you know, being able to uplift people, we can also educate people, and we're kind of historians. So, yeah, you're right. It is cool to see the media booming again. I thought I agree with you. This is probably the fourth or fifth time it's been through a boom. I think the one thing that's different this time, though, is I don't think we've ever seen corporations invest this kind of money, talent, or energy in the market. I could be wrong. You're probably a better student of the podcasting world than I am, but I don't recall anybody throwing $100 million at a host before now.
No, I agree. It's something that, just in terms of podcast sponsorships, just the fact that there are now platforms over this last couple of years that have started to emerge that help people find sponsors and match sponsors with podcasters, that shows the emergence of the importance and the exposure of podcasting. I mentioned just a moment ago, there are podcast publishing agencies, which I'm contacted by every single day, and publicists that I wasn't speaking to 3 years ago. There's a whole wealth of opportunity there in the podcasting space for people like yourself, consultants, agencies, networks. And actually, that's another thing you described, networks. So there wasn't really a concept of podcast. There were maybe a few podcast networks 5 years ago or so, but now you see this emergence of people thinking about podcasts as a network. And that's also quite fascinating as well. So there's a lot that's changing, a lot that's developed in the space, particularly over this last couple of years.
Yeah. You want to hear something funny?
Always.
The last time I went to PodFest, because it's been virtual since the pandemic hit. So we're looking at 2020, I think, was the the last time they held it. And I went to that conference. At the time, I was thinking about the network because my good friend Alex Sanfilippo from Podmatch had put the idea in my head a year before I actually did it. But I basically told him he was out of his dang mind, and he let me continue with that thought for another year before he finally convinced me. But I went to PodFest, and I went to every vendor. I had two purposes. One, I wanted to get my treasure map signed saying I'd been to all the vendors so I'd have a chance to win the zero gravity ride in the Vomit Comet. But my other goal was I wanted to see what the experts or what the vendors would say about starting a network. And, you know, when you go to those things, usually when you talk to vendors, they're going to try to sell you something. When I asked people about creating a podcast network, you know what I was told by every single person? There was only four people who gave me an answer, but you know what they all said? I said, I want to start a network. They said, Max, forget about it. You don't want to start a network? Are you crazy? You know, none of them thought it was a good idea. And these are people who, you know, I dress pretty nice when I go to these events. So I can't figure they knew I was on a budget or nothing. But I mean, it's like they didn't care to talk to me about the technology or the hardware that maybe they could have sold to me if they had had some advice on creating a network. That's a little over 2 years ago. That's at PodFest, one of the biggest conferences for independent podcasters out there.
Yeah, so much has changed. And actually, you described it as you were talking as your indoor adventure over this last couple of years. I'm interested to know. And by the way, before we go into this, I can totally see the next book that's on the horizon. It's got to be The Podcast Adventures of Maxwell Ivey. That has to be the next book title.
I've actually got a working title.
Oh, okay, nice.
I think you're going to like it.
Can you reveal the title?
What's it going to hurt? Nobody's going to steal it from me. It's a unique title. And if they do steal it from me, I'll write the book anyway, and my book will sell more copies because they aren't neat. You know, I'm a real abundance type of character. You know, I rarely see the world as having such limited resources that somebody else winning means I have to lose. So yeah, if somebody wants to do a similar book, they can. And there are people who are going through similar experiences, maybe not without the vision loss, but or with the vision loss, but there are people. So I think the title should be the From Frightened Blog Talk Radio Guest to the What's Your Excuse Podcast Network.
Yeah, that's the full journey, isn't it? From being a guest to hosting your own network. That's quite a big transition.
From being a scared guest. From being a guest who had whose first radio experience was so bad that most people would have quit based on my first experience being on the air on a program talking about my business. I mean, it was horrible. I was on with Brian the Hammer Jackson on Blog Talk Radio, which is kind of like they call it a radio network, but I think it's more akin to podcasting than anything else.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
And I was on my old Sprint flip phone. My phone dropped the call, and then I'm trying to call him back, and I hung up on him. And then we finally get reconnected together, and he goes, "What the heck is wrong with you? Are you blind or something?" And so I'm just sitting there, I'm quiet for a few seconds. And as you know, in anything that's being sent out live, the worst thing that can happen is dead audio. I mean, it's better for people to be cursing than it is for there to be nothing, especially on radio. So maybe 20, 30 seconds later, I started laughing. He started laughing. And we had a good, you know, 4 or 5 minute conversation. And I ended up spending pretty much every Friday for the next 3 or 4 months talking about my business and my life and, you know, things that were going on with the Midway. And he was actually... at the end of the time I was doing his show was when I really started becoming the blind blogger.
Right.
So it was, but yeah, it's, you know, it's like standing outside my garage in the cold because I didn't want anybody hearing me do this. And, you know, just like, man, I don't know how this is going to go or nothing. First time ever. I have friends who will tell you Max is never nervous or never scared. And I have one friend from church who's like, Max, the next time you think you're going to get nervous, would you call me? Because I want to see what that looks like. You
know? That's the time to get in your bunker because something's not going right with the world if you're losing your confidence there.
No, you can have confidence and still be nervous.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's counterintuitive to most everybody else, but I think me and you can agree that, you know, or as I recorded one time, even a really positive person can have a few minutes where they're not so sure, you know.
Mm.
It's been fun. And yeah, there is a book, and I'm starting to feel like I've been making excuses with that book, that I really need to give myself a deadline, that I need to, you know, to say, okay, Max, this is when you're going to finish writing it and when you're going to finish editing it and when you're going to send it off to start the process. But as you know, I get distracted, you know, in the last, in the last year, I wrote and recorded my first song. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing the work with the podcast network. I still do some public speaking, even though I'm not crazy about public speaking via Zoom. You know, so I get distracted, and sometimes it's, you know, with, especially with writing, I don't get writer's block, but it's like, I really, if it is, once I get started, I'm great. So I think what I need to do is just put it on my list for the next few days that, okay, Max, before you go to bed, you have to write for 5 minutes, because that's usually what has worked for me over the years when writing for the purposes of a book is, you know, just thinking, okay, this is the one idea that I want to talk about, and I'm going to write for a few minutes. And, you know, usually that leads to hearing my clock tell me it's 2:30 in the morning or something. So, and I don't know about you, as a podcast host, this is something I've been dealing with lately. I'm trying to get a handle on it. Do you ever feel guilty for not releasing more content sooner? Because I have had some technical problems in the past year or so. I was without a laptop for 3 or 4 months. You know, there's been some other stuff. I had some problems with one of the hosting platforms I used for my podcast for a while. So I've got a lot of content that's been recorded that hasn't been released. And so I feel sometimes torn between, you know, just maintaining my regular schedule and, Max, you've got all this great stuff that these people shared with you. It needs to be out there, you know? So,
well, it's really interesting that, because I think there is, you talked about nervousness, but the other side of that with podcasting is the excitement of, you have this finished product, you finish a recording, and you kind of, we were just talking about editing before this. You wish it was just kind of edited and done and out to the world. And I think it's because you share that experience with someone, and you learn a lesson typically, like in a good interview, you've learned something, maybe the guest has learned something, and you want those lessons to resonate with other people in the world. And so you just want to release them so that you get that anticipation or excitement. That sometimes is something that I suffer from. And I almost don't want to wait till the next episode release that. I want to release it now.
Yeah, that's what I fight with. And the other thing I have is, when I first started podcasting as the blind blogger, I had a co-host named Frederick Bai, who I blame for getting me started in podcasting in the first place, in a loving way, because we're still really good friends. But I mean, it's like, it was a time when I told people I don't want to have a podcast, but I'll have one if somebody shows up and takes care of the technical stuff. And then, you know, Fred showed up and started taking care of it. So I've got probably 20, maybe 30 episodes that aren't available on my podcast feed. They're out there in the world, but they're not where people would expect to find them. So even that, you know, trying to get that content moved where people can hear it over here. And I do have to thank Frederick for one really important thing that he did do for me is between him and the famous, you know, 12-year-old Izzy from Podfest, between those two, they gave me my introduction, because Frederick taught me to say, known around the world as the blind blogger, like I mean it. And Izzy taught me to call my show, "What's Your Excuse?" instead of just saying, "What's Your Excuse?" I mean, it didn't seem like much to me at the time, but, you know, something just changing the emphasis really, you know, makes it sound more like I'm challenging people to overcome their excuses instead of just reading the title of my show. And that's one of the things I wish more people would understand is you don't have to have it all figured out when you start your podcast. Mm. I mean, you can change your name, you can change your artwork, you can change your subject matter, you can change your length, you can change so many things. And as long as you change them wherever your feed is housed, it will automatically propagate that to all the different podcast players you're connected to. But I mean, so many people, they're really worried about getting it right the first time. And trust me, I have recorded with horrible audio. I've recorded with a camera that was looking up my nose because I didn't know no better. I've recorded with the old ceiling fan over your head with no light in front of you that everybody has been through. But people have still listened to my stuff. They've still watched my stuff. They've still become great followers. And I've got this great community because I worried more about the content and showing up than I did about, you know, well, maybe this ain't perfect. Well, actually, probably it ain't perfect. Actually, probably it ain't nowhere close to perfect. But I'm one of those people who I believe that a good podcast that's out there now is better than something close to perfect next week, next month, or next year. And I do my best to live by that example and help others to embrace it, because I think there are way too many people in the world who have stuff to share with us, with me and you, who aren't doing it because they're afraid of not being anywhere close to good enough, you know?
One of the things about podcasting that makes it perfect is when you sense when you embrace that sense of adventure that you discussed. So it's less about audio quality. It's less about necessary structure. I think preparation has something to do with it. When you are present and you embrace that sense of adventure in conversation with someone, it's really an art. If you treat podcasting like an art, it makes sense that your first rodeo isn't going to be the best. You know, your first time going, you know, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be clean. You're going to have to do lots of editing. You kind of have to find your style and what you feel comfortable with.
Right. And, you know, we talked about editing earlier, so I think full disclosure, I should mention to people what my style is. I'm not good at editing. It takes me a long time. I don't currently have the budget to hire somebody to edit every episode, so I don't do that. But I decided a long time ago, I said, you know, Max, I think that it's more important to get the content out there than it is for me to worry about editing it at this point. Now, I'm still hoping that someday down the road I'll change that. And you know, who knows, maybe somebody is watching today that may want to support the WYE network or What's Your Excuse show by doing some editing. I don't know. We'll find out when this goes live. Mm-hmm. But so I decided, okay, Max, why can't you just say that your podcast is recorded live, tell people in advance you're not going to edit it, and go from there. And that's what I've done. And so my podcast is about 45 minutes to an hour. Sometimes it's more or less. I have conversations with the guests. I generally start with one question that Max wants to know the answer with, or just see where that takes the both of us. And I try to go back to something you said earlier. You said that if you're a podcaster and if you're doing this right, that you and your guest should each learn something about yourselves or something from the other person during the course of your conversation. So that's what I try to do. And more often than not, I either learn something new or I relearn something that I know, should have known, but have forgotten and stopped doing. Mm-hmm. So, but that's my style. I take advantage of the fact that my brand is No Excuses. I take advantage of the fact that I'm visually impaired, and a lot of people out there still don't believe, still wonder about a blind guy and how he actually does a podcast. So a lot of them are more than willing to accept, well, he probably doesn't edit because he can't. No, there are thousands of, you know, extremely talented, professionally educated sound engineers in the world who are blind, who can make the equipment walk and talk. I just don't know any of them personally and don't have any of them on the payroll. But so I said, you know, I'm going to do it recorded live. And so far, the only problem I've had with that, my audience would probably grow faster if I edited it, but it's growing steadily and they're loyal. The only problem I've really had with it is I've had a couple of guests who want me to edit their podcast. And I'm like, look, I don't do that. It's not part. And so, you know, the whole vibe of how it's not edited, how it's real and authentic and in the moment, even if it's recorded and played later, has really served me well over the course of 6 years. So what I do won't work for everybody, but I think it will work for a lot of people, especially in the beginning, in those, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks when you're finding out whether or not this is something you feel like you want to do for more than a short-term project. Then you think about things like, should I have better equipment? Should I change the lighting if I'm recording video? Should I record video? You know, should I edit? If I do edit, what should be the parameters for editing? Because, you know, some people, you know, they can chop off the bad pieces on the end and the middle and they're done. Other people, they start opening that editing software and 3 hours later, they're still not done editing a 15-minute podcast.
And where are you at in terms of, I'm really interested because we had a communication issue in the lead up to this, in that I asked you to, we were talking about bookings, and I use a system called Tidy Cow, and I use a recording software called Zencastr, and it seemed like it was really difficult for you to use. And actually, I was sitting there thinking, well, actually, this must be really unintuitive for you to use. So Zoom, we're using Zoom at the moment, but in this adventure that you've gone on to learn about podcasting and all the different software that people use, is it challenging to learn all the different software? I imagine from an accessibility standpoint, it must be really difficult.
Well, for the most part, it's not all that bad, because the better options have a lot of things that are fairly similar. You know, a lot of people are stealing from Zoom, thankfully. There are some where, you know, connecting with them is a little harder. My problem with Zencast is, I think, a timing issue. I think I'm showing up either too soon or too late.
Right.
And it's timing out on me for the meeting. That's what I think with Zencast. I've done Zencast a couple of times, but for some reason, had trouble with this time. I recently had to do one on, what is that, River FM or whatever.
Yeah, Riverside, okay. Yeah.
I enjoy StreamYard, but for some reason, whenever I use StreamYard, I have to remind myself to reboot my computer, or the next time I go online for a meeting after I use StreamYard, my camera won't work.
Right.
And I have no idea why that is. Nobody knows. They think the general consensus is it's operator error, that Max doesn't know what the heck he's doing. And I'm more than happy to agree with those people, because I will make it very clear to anybody who asks, and many who haven't, Max may have two websites and a blog and podcast, but Max is not a tech person, you know? So, but I do have friends who are, thank goodness. But yeah, the various platforms, it is sometimes challenging, because it seems like there are new ones popping up all the time. Mm. But the real problem for me is, if I spend the time to figure out what a thing does the first time I'm going to use it, then I need them to keep it the same way between then and the next time I use it. Unfortunately, most of the people who create these meeting platforms, they like to get paid on Friday or Monday. And so they often will update stuff just to update stuff. And that's okay. I understand that. I can respect a person wanting to pay their bills. But here's the thing, guys. If you update your website, your blog, your podcast, your app, whatever, if you update it, whether you have a legitimate reason or whether you're just doing it to make sure they know why you're there, do this for me. Send out an email or post on social media and go, hey, we just changed this to this. Here's where you can find the thing you used to find here. And I tell you, a lot of times when I'm on a website, I navigate to what I want by doing a search for the first few letters of the label for the button or the link. So as something that may seem like nothing, changing the name of a link changes whether or not I can find the link. I have had two really, you know, bad experiences. One was with a podcast guest matching service that changed their search results page, which I had bookmarked, from I think it was underscore shows to slash shows. And I spent over an hour trying to figure out how to get back to where I wanted to get to, and finally had to send them an email.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, Twitter moved the new tweet button from the top right part of the screen to the lower left part of the screen on their iOS version. And it was almost a whole day before somebody told me where I needed to go to on the app to be able to post new tweets. Up until then, I could just reply or retweet other people's content. So it's a little bit of trouble when you first use something, but if people will maintain consistency and notify people when they have to change the things, that would make my life a whole lot easier. Accessibility with the sites, and also, you know, with the sites where you upload the content, you know, with YouTube, Vineyard, TikTok, for people who use Spotify, you know, for my hosting, Blueberry, you know, there are so many options for you to choose from. And, you know, even you know, besides whatever hosting platform you've chosen for your podcast, you know, you've got the social media accounts, and you know, then you're looking at sharing your content directly or posting your links. So it's, there are a lot of websites I have to navigate and a lot of apps I have to use once the podcast is finished recording, or, you know, when you go live to record it. So it can get a bit aggravating after a while. It's just, and you know, we can talk till we're blue in our faces, but I've found the only thing that works with developers is to find a cost benefit for them considering accessibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to complain for years about alternative text tags for images, and nobody listened to me. But when I finally started telling them, hey, you do know that Google, Siri, Bing, and all the other search engines index the alternative text you use for your images, and you're missing an opportunity for people to find you in the search engines. Once I started telling them that, they were like, wow, man, we've got to add that text to all of our images. And then, you know, platforms like GoDaddy and WordPress and others started embedding the options to add the alternative text to even remind people to do it. So, you know, we've just got to find more, you know, financial benefits to accessibility. I haven't come up with any new ones, but I'm working on it.
Mm. You said something really that stuck with me since when we first spoke, and we were discussing this topic a little bit, and you were saying how we were discussing that it's unfortunate that we have to go to this length, because, you know, just being good people should be enough, and trying to make everything inclusive should be enough. But when it's not, what do you do? And you were explaining to me that one really interesting thing, particularly about the visually impaired and that community, particularly as purchasers, is that there's a real sense of loyalty. So if you go the extra mile to make sure your website is accessible, then your visually impaired customers will stay loyal to you. And that really stuck with me.
Yeah, and it's true. I wish we had some documented proof of it. I only have anecdotal information, but I do know that as a rule, the visually impaired and people with disabilities, they will pay. They're very loyal customers. They will overpay for products and services when they have to, in order to support companies that really care about their business. And then beyond that, I don't know if I mentioned this the first time we talked, but we, as a rule, we also make very, very loyal, dedicated employees. And beyond that, the employer gets the bonus of having employees who generally have a lot of experience in finding creative solutions, because quite often when we want to figure out how to do something for ourselves, we don't have, you know, a university trained engineer at our beck and call to help us figure out, you know, how do we do this? So, you know, not only do you get people who want to be there and they will go out of their way to be good employees, but they're also, like I say, positive, creative problem solvers out of necessity. So, yeah, there's a lot of value in doing business, in making sure your products and services and your websites are accessible, and also inviting to people with disabilities. There's also a lot of value in employing, training, and promoting us. Even the level at which we leave companies is lower than the average for a lot of groups. And then the one other thing that just occurred to me is something that I only recently started thinking about because of my friend Chelsea Nguyen, who's a stylist that helps helps visually impaired people and other people with disabilities to, you know, to maintain a professional image so they can get the jobs they love. She was like, there are so many people who don't know how to speak in language on their websites that doesn't turn off people with disabilities. And that's something I've only recently been thinking about. And I haven't really noticed anything on any websites lately, because I'm usually focused on accomplishing a particular goal, but I'm going to have to pay more attention to the language people are using on their websites and their product descriptions and their marketing copy on their websites, because that's, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of times you don't have to be anti somebody with a disability. A lot of times it's just the way you talk about it. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are trying to do the right thing, but they're not talking about it with the right words or with the right emphasis or the right language. So that's another thing that is much more difficult than making a website accessible, but it's something that more people, especially in the online space, should consider, because as a rule, people with disabilities are usually more challenged by their logistics, and so they're usually more likely to purchase from home. I hope more people will do it. You're right. It'd be great if we could just say, hey, this is the right thing to do. Everybody do it. But that ain't going to happen.
So on the topic of loyalty, I'm really interested to know, you mentioned in the lead up to this at one point, we were exchanging emails, and you said the one challenge that you found recently, I think, was that you had to switch from PC to Mac. So how's that transition gone?
Well, it is and it isn't. Okay, full disclosure, I got the Windows computer that I purchased for myself from Computers for the Blind, a very great foundation that helps people that with vision loss purchase computers for much more reasonable costs than if you bought them off the shelf and if you bought the screen reading software off the shelf. Because with Windows, it isn't built in and part of the operating system like it is with a Mac. Right. So bought that a few months ago and have really been trying to use it, but it is a struggle because I have to think about everything I do before I do it. Then I usually have to get it wrong 3 or 4 times before I remember what it is I'm supposed to be doing. So the Windows is not great, but it has, but after I spoke to you, I've since been given a MacBook Air. It's 4 years old, but it was given to me by some people at a company that I gave a talk for last year that I had built some relationships with some of the staff. And when they found out that I didn't have a computer, and then when they found out I had one, but it was one I wasn't familiar with, they were like, Max, we want to help you out. So I now have a MacBook and a Windows computer. And when I need to do something in a hurry or when I'm deciding what computer to take with me if and when I travel again, I have the MacBook with all the Microsoft software installed on it. So that's great. I'm expecting to get some training from the state of Texas to where I'll know more about the Windows computer going forward. But yeah, it's difficult when you've been using an operating system for, 12 or 13 years. And so not only am I having to change operating systems, I'm having to change screen readers because Windows doesn't do anything the way Apple does it. And the main screen reader for Windows is called JAWS for Windows. Doesn't do the thing, pretty much doesn't do anything the same way that VoiceOver for the Mac does it. And the keyboard commands are different. What you can do with keyboard commands is different. So, I mean, it's, this is going to sound, like whining maybe, but just one very simple difference that is that can, really aggravate you if you're in a hurry. Is on Mac, most everything is Command plus other keys. On Windows, most everything is Alt plus other keys. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've been doing Command C and Command V to copy and paste for years, having to think to press the Alt instead of the Command key, that's hard, So I'm getting there. The Windows computer, having access to the Microsoft software, which I'm told runs better on a Windows computer than it does on a Mac. So that, and also that JAWS and Microsoft play better together than Microsoft does with VoiceOver. So I'm hoping that's going to be the case. Trust me, I had to go a long way to get the Windows computer after, before my MacBook broke and then after it broke. So I'm committed to it. Just like I'm committed to being able to do as much as I can, if not everything I have to do with my tablet. But I realize that there are some roadblocks and there are going to be times where, Max, you just don't have an extra 15 or 20 or 30 minutes to figure out how to do it on the Microsoft machine. But the one really cool thing about having two computers, and this has to do with consistency and, being a blind person, it's really important for things to stay where I put them. I now have the Windows machine set up at my desk with my camera and my headset plugged into it, and they stay plugged into it. And so unless somebody messes with my stuff, I can almost guarantee that I can sit down and press record and the camera will be pointed at my face, not over my shoulder. So, having the Windows computer to do that and maintain consistency, and then having the MacBook to move around the room or the rest of the house, and I have to unhook things and then rehook things. So it's really conducive that way. I'm really loving being able to just pick up my laptop and go to another part of the house and you know, show my face with the rest of the family so they don't think I'm ignoring them or hiding out from them. So, but yeah, it's a struggle. But it's not like I don't want to use the windows. Mm. But I will admit that it's because so many businesses and companies depend on the Microsoft software that I decided I had to. Because, hey, I do great work as a publicist, as a podcast host, as somebody who can teach other people to be podcasters, be guests. But most of the, you know, if I want to grow this business, I need to be able to reach the companies that have the money to invest, or to reach the nonprofits or the governmental agencies that have the money to invest. And all of those people use Microsoft applications.
Yeah. The fluidity is something that's interesting to me, because as you were speaking there, you spoke a lot about the resourcefulness and creativity that you have to use to sometimes overcome problems, and the amount of time and trial and error that you have to go through to get things working. And what I'm thinking through here is in theory, if you're investing more time in podcasting now than perhaps writing, do you notice a difference in your productivity and your output in comparison to writing? So how often are you recording at the moment as both a guest and a host? Is it something you jump in and do every day?
It's something I do on one side of the mic or the other pretty much every day. And in fact, next week I have a really full week, because the organizers of the Mobility Matters Conference at Portland State reached out to me and asked me to help them promote their conference by interviewing some of the speakers on my podcast. And, you know, this was not their idea. This was my crazy idea. So if this ends up being one of those ideas where, you know, someday me and you are having a cuppa or drinking a cold beer or warm beer, and I have to talk about it, maybe I'll have to admit it was a mistake. But next week, I'm going to record 5 podcast episodes that are going to release the following week, one a day, to promote this conference. And I feel like it'll be a fun challenge. I'm hoping that it's going to help me address some of the shortcomings in my podcast release process. You know, we have to create better systems and better workflow the more we do this. So, you know, I did a 15 video and 15 day challenge a few years ago. And at the end of that, I felt like my video recording quality was so much better. I was recording shorter videos and getting to the point quicker. And I'm hoping the same thing's going to happen with a podcast. If I'm doing, at least in the short term, doing more recordings and releasing more recordings than I generally do as part of a promotion, I'm hoping it's going to teach me something about my process that's going to make it even easier for me down the road, because my show is the flagship show of a network. So I really can't stop doing my podcast. Plus, I feel like I'd be letting people down out there. I think there are a few people at least who expect me to release new content and look forward to it. So, and I really wouldn't want to disappoint people, but like I say, it's the What's Your Excuse podcast on the What's Your Excuse network. So, but eventually, in order to keep doing my podcast, I'm going to have to get more efficient, hire more people, or both. So I'm thinking next week's going to be a good challenge for me. And I thought it was really cool that these people found me and decided that there was value in my podcast to help bring more awareness to a conference on disability, especially a conference that's focused on mobility in all aspects, not just visual impairment, but also people who are paraplegics, quadriplegics, people who are deaf, who sometimes have difficulty navigating because they don't have the option of being able to speak to people directly. So I think it's a valuable conference. It was great that they reached out to me. And you know, I'll probably send you an email next week and go, I'm never going to do this again, but it was great.
And Max, you have a very can-do attitude, but in closing for this episode, particularly on this aspect of being a publicist, so, you know, I've got the sense from talking to you a couple of times, you know, the conversation is very natural, you have lots to tell about your story, you're opinionated, you're passionate. When you have to then promote that in other people, what's the biggest challenge? So do you find that the nervousness aspect is a challenge, for example? What kind of the common obstacles that maybe prevent people from actually launching their podcasts and continuing with it?
You asked me about being a publicist, yeah. and you know, does it? What is the hardest thing about that? Hmm. Now, people need to remember: before I was a podcaster, I was a carnival promoter. I've been making cold calls and sending emails half my life. So, you know, making a pitch and telling a story is pretty much ingrained in who I am. So, don't think what I'm going to say now means there's something wrong with you, because really I'm nothing special. I'm just a guy who has a lot of experience doing it wrong. So the biggest problem I have is figuring out how to tell the client's story in few enough words that the person receiving the email will read far enough to decide they want to read more, but in enough words so that I don't leave out the important parts of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do, and it's one of the reasons why I get so many people who say yes, because I don't approach it as I've got to get this done under 100 words or under 300 characters. My goal is to tell the podcast host or the speaking event organizer, I want to tell them a short version of the guest's story, and I want them to already be saying yes when they get to the end of the first paragraph, and then notice, oh, wait a minute, there's more information about this person, and take it from there. That's the hardest part, because you know me. I love those adjectives you used on me. They're mostly positive, but I know that I'm wordy. I know I'm verbose. I know I only have a passing acquaintance with the word brevity. So getting the story across in a limited number of words is the hard part when it comes to doing somebody else's publicity, and it's the most important part that anybody should think of. See, people, they, even if a host is looking for guests, they're not going to book you because of you. They're not going to book you because you got this great product or this great book. They're going to book you first because of your story. So, you know what your story is, learn how to tell it, be able to put it in a short but expressive paragraph to get their attention and have them want to read more. And one of the things I love doing is sitting down with people and having a conversation about their story. If for some reason they don't completely understand what it is about them that would make them compelling to a podcast host, a radio host, a TV host, et cetera. So that's your first question. Now, second question when it comes to people starting a podcast, talking themselves out of starting, or I think the most important thing I tell people there is a podcast, in my opinion, especially in the beginning, should be personal. You should make these decisions based on what works for you and what is important for you. Because trust me, after you do it a while, you're going to change. You're going to get better. You're going to learn things. So in the beginning, I say try to avoid these four words: should or should not. Try to make decisions based on what works for you or what you think will work for you, as opposed to doing what everybody else says you have to do. So I'm one of these people. I actually spoke at PodFest on starting a podcast, and I followed Dave Jackson to the mic. And the first words out of my mouth was, I said, you know, you've spent the first half of the day learning how to start a podcast as a good podcast. Well, I'm here to tell you that, in my opinion, the best way to start a good podcast is to be bad at it for a while. And that's how I approach it. I mean, because too many people talk themselves out of it because they're like, oh, I got to have fancy equipment. You know, I have to edit. I have to have lighting. I have to create an intro. When I first started recording videos, I sang on my intro because I didn't have any way to create an intro. So, you know, so a lot of people, they just jump right into their podcast and say, hey, I'm whoever, and this is the podcast, and today we're going to talk about what, you know. But there are people who will say, man, I need to have an intro like some of the people that are famous. You know, even that, something that shouldn't be a big deal, because it's only going to last, what, 30, 60 seconds, will stop some people from podcasting. The important thing is the content. Make decisions based on your personal abilities and resources at the time, not based on what everybody else says you should do. And above all else, try to keep it fun. Try to find some way to be curious, to make it an experience, to make it an adventure. I really do need to thank my podcast host, the first one on the network, Emily Trepanier from Shredding for Gold. I really do need to thank her, because Well, she's out there doing crazy stuff on the hills on her snowboard. I'm working behind my laptop, and she's like, "Max, you're on the biggest adventure of your life. As long as I remember that this, you know, having my podcast, helping other people start podcasts, doing the podcast, as long as I think of it as an adventure, I don't miss leaving my house and going to conferences. I don't miss leaving my house and going to speak to local organizations. You know, it's as long as I see what I'm doing as an adventure." And I'm reminded of one of my favorite sayings. It came from Elizabeth Gilbert in her book for creatives called Big Magic. Now, a lot of people know Elizabeth Gilbert from her book and movie Eat, Pray, Love. And I'm honest enough to admit that I not only read her book, but I enjoyed it. I learned something from it. But she likes to say that curiosity will carry you through when passion deserts you. So find some way to stay curious. I love doing interviews because as long as I show up and actually talk to the person on the other side of the mic, I'm going to find something new. I'm going to learn something new. I'm going to have experiences through their words that I've never had before. I mean, it's all about staying. Somebody once wrote what they thought was a critical review of my writing. It said, "Max approaches the world with a wide-eyed, childlike wonder." And I've hung on to that phrase because I love that phrase. Mm. You know, that's the way I do things. I really am here to see what's going to happen today, the next 5 minutes, the next 2 hours, whatever. And as long as you approach your podcast that way, like every day can be some sort of a surprise, an education, a celebration. And even the days when it goes wrong can still be part of the adventure as long as you don't let it stop you. You know, as long as you reschedule, as long as you reevaluate why it didn't go right the first time. So that would be my advice. Keep it simple. Make it personal. Stay curious. Try to make it as much of an adventure as possible.
And Max, for anyone listening that's curious to learn more about you, tell them where they can find out more about you and the What's Your Excuse Network.
I love that. You know, you did that really well. I can't get my guests to do it at the end of my show. You just did that really well. So thank you. I know you didn't ask it, but that's one of the things that's really wonderful about podcasts is the other hosts, they get me. They have taken the time to understand me. They've been through some of the same things, if not exactly the same things. And to me, that is one of the real values of having conversations like this. So to your question, people can find me at theblindblogger.net. That's theblindblogger.net. They can also send an email to justask@theblindblogger.net. My website for the podcast network is wyexcuse.com. They can also find my podcast on Alexa, Google, and Siri by saying, "Hey, play What's Your Excuse?" And they will play the most recent episode, and you can binge listen to your heart's content. I hope you will. But pretty much everything goes through the blindblogger.net. It's who I have been. It's who I am. And I'm pretty sure it's who I will be to a lot of people, even while I try to combine the Mr. Midway from my carnival days with the blind blogger, with Mr. What's Your Excuse, and with who knows what other nickname somebody that likes me is going to hang on me next week.
Mr. Curious, in closing, you're someone that follows their curiosity, and I think that's a wonderful thing, and it certainly it keeps me motivated. And as I said, it's funny in podcasting because you speak to people and then you move on and have the next conversation. But some conversations, some messages, some lessons stick with you. And I really enjoyed the first time around speaking to you. And you're someone that I can tell I could speak to for another hour or more, you know, and continue the conversation.
I appreciate that. That's a very high compliment. And, you know, there are a lot of people that I stay in contact with, but very, very few who we've made the kind of connection where they want to come back to me again. So I appreciate that. It's a very high compliment. And I could sit and talk with you a long time. You know, you said how things come back around and how they continue to evolve. That's why, you know, that's why when I sing on my podcast or at speaking events, it's usually The River by Garth Brooks, because I can't think of another song that I've heard that I can sing that really expresses, you know, who I've been. Because, you know, where I'm at now isn't where I started. And where I'm at now, who knows, maybe won't be where I'm at next year or 2 years from now. I believe I'm pretty close. I believe I'm really close to finding my one favorite first perfect thing. But you know me, that won't stop me from trying other things that I haven't before.
Yeah. And the next immediate challenge is next week with all the podcasts that you're recording. So we'll look forward to that from a distance as well.
Thank you.
Okay, Mac, thank you so much. And this has been the Internet Marketing Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.